All right, Fred. Well,
here we are on Free Radio Santa Cruz. How would you describe yourself? A union member, community activist?
There you go. Yeah, you're on the right track.
Just a long-term resident who cares about the community.
Be my view.
Yes. So you're a man who strongly supported this new incoming progressive slate, the three candidates, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, now council members, who were concerned about have retreated on the sleeping ban. But I guess you're concerned with a broader spectrum of issues, and there's been a dialogue or an exchange of letters going on in the Good Times. I have two copies of Rotkin's response to you in the December 3rd issue of the Good Times, but I don't have your original letter. Do you have a copy of that with you?
Let's see, Robert, I may have one. He pretty much fairly sets out the criticisms in his responses. I don't think there's too much obfuscation going on that. He tries to answer them. I think he did a good job, actually. Unfortunately, really what we have here is not as much of a debate for the fun of a debate and trying to see who can score the most points, but just trying to establish for him that he needs to change some of his voting patterns. And, we're not just playing around here. We're actually talking about crucial issues. Yeah, I've got a excuse me. I got a copy of it in front of me now. Here.
Could you read your original letter?
Okay, dear editor, your recent article, including ex-progressive, ex-socialist Mike Rotkin with other progressive local politicians, is obviously the beginning of a PR campaign by Mr. Rotkin. He's trying to jump from the sinking ship of the Chamber of Commerce council candidates he endorsed. Now that the real progressives have thoroughly thrashed the bogus progressive opponents in the recent election. In response to Rotkin's statement in the article, "Show me where I voted wrong," here are a number of recent incidents that fall immediately to mind. And I'll go through those if you like.
Please.
First, voted to sell the Pelton Street property, even though the signatures for a ballot initiative on the sale had already been submitted to the city clerk's office, a total display of contempt for the democratic process. Two, voted against a 50% contribution by the city to help purchase the Bombay property. Three, voted for the sleeping ban in spite of full knowledge that the Reagan-era cuts had forced thousands of mentally ill persons into this street to fend for themselves. And he's corrected me somewhat on that, and I can expand on that in a minute when I finish this letter.
And I have some things to say about that as well.
Yeah, I bet you would. I do stand corrected on one of the details there, but the actual total concept remains the same on that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, voted just weeks before the recent election to give away, claimed the title for 80% of the river tidelands that the city had, and deliberately helped rig a scheme to bypass the city charter requirement rather that the issue go to a vote of the people. In addition, he only voted correctly after he was forced by massive public outcry on the following issues. One, Measure C, this pro-union activist, as he styled himself, wanted to deny firefighters the right to arbitration of contract disputes, and they are not allowed to strike under state law. Two, second issue there, Celia Scott's rightful rotation to the mayor's post. Virtually all agree she's done an excellent job, and many see an issue of blatant sexism here. And the third issue, the taxpayer ripoff boardwalk gift beach area plan, which was actually just a tactical retreat until after the election that they assumed they would win. Mr. Rotkin has disqualified himself as a progressive with his voting record and has bet on the wrong side in the recent council election, and in fact has become politically irrelevant as the new progressive council does not need his vote.
And that was a letter on November 25th in the Good Times.
Huh?
And now, would you like me to read, or would you rather read yourself Rotkin's response?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead, or if you want, I've prepared something.
But let me read his response first, and then you can read your response.
Unless you want to go point by point, it might be a little clearer to the listeners if we went back and forth point by point. If you want.
Why don't we do this? I'll read the entire thing, and then we'll go at it point by point.
Fine.
I think that's a great idea. Rotkin's response on the December 3rd issue of the Good Times was, Fred Geiger's letter, Good Times, November 25th, easily confirms my point about the lack of a bill of particulars for his rather cavalier purge of me from the progressive camp despite three decades of dedicated work on behalf of progressive issues. point, while working against a motion for $800,000 to purchase Bombay, I voted to commit $1 million for the same purpose a week later. More importantly, I was the major proponent, along with Scott Kennedy, of the successful Measure G, which funds the purchase of the property. Point. I never opposed Celia Scott's election to mayor last year. I was not even among those council members who considered it. Point. I voted with a unanimous council to approve a scaled-down beach area plan. The council spent 7 years working on that plan with all unanimous council votes, including the last one. Point. I voted to sell Pelton property, a plan supported by Mayor Byers, until the last vote, in order to raise money for the purchase of the Bombay property and a city park. The homeless garden now has space needed for expansion at the Poganip. The petition was short of the minimum number of registered voters, too late to stop the sale, and provided voters with no alternative funding source for the Greenbelt or south of Laurel Park. Point. I never voted for a sleeping ban. It has been in place since the 1960s. I simply joined every member of the City Council since 1970 in not putting its removal on a council agenda. Progressives should support, as I have said, expanded services for the homeless, not the, quote, right to sleep outside in bad weather. Point. I never voted to give away title to city lands. I follow the advice of state legal experts to accept a settlement giving the city 20% of a boardwalk parking lot. They advise that if we challenge the boardwalk's ownership of this property, the city will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, lose in court, get no public land, and set a bad precedent for public ownership of other tide lands in California. Point, I have always supported the right of firefighters to binding arbitration over contract disputes. I oppose the right of arbitrators rather than elected officials to set salaries. Mike Rutkin, Santa Cruz, Good Times, December 3rd. Now, you have a letter, of course, that you've written in response, but I like your idea of going through this point by point. Perhaps, rather than read your letter aloud, we can simply deal with his points, and you can discuss them sort of ad lib, if you want. Okay, which would you rather?
Yeah, or, you know, basically referring on this.
Sure. Well, his first point is, of course, voting. He said, while voting against a motion for $800,000 to purchase Bombay, I voted to commit $1 million for the same purchase a week later. More importantly, I was the major proponent, along with Scott Kennedy, of the successful Measure G, which funds the purchase of the property. Give listeners, if you can, Fred, like a 30-second update on what this is all about, if they haven't heard of the issue.
Well, this was the land on the end of the city, that was going to be developed unless it could be purchased from the developer. And this is sort of typical of Rotkin here, you know, to slant it. I mean, like I say, he's looking at this as more of a debate than an honest discourse, I feel. And he's saying, well, you know, I did vote no originally. Well, as in my original letter, I said that often only by massive public pressure is he forced to vote correctly. So he admits on his point one that he didn't vote correctly originally, and then you know, after considerable pressure, he did vote to put some more money up, and he's trying to take credit for Measure G, you know, which is, you know, he had some role in it, but I don't think he should try to take credit for it.
What do you think of his mentioning Scott Kennedy there?
Well, I think there's a pretty strong association between the two of them. They operated in unison on just about everything, and I think their record with the progressive communities are fairly similar as a result of this collaboration.
Right. I mean, is it fair to say Kennedy was also a major proponent of Measure G?
Well, they were both people that that proposed the idea, but to try to take credit for it, you know, its passage and all that, is, I think, really reaching.
Mm-hmm. Anything more on that point?
Okay, we can move on. There's a lot of stuff here.
I never opposed Celia Scott's election, he continues, to mayor last year. I was not even among those council members who considered it.
Well, you know, I haven't had the time to go back and research the record, including the Sentinel and the council minutes, but it hasn't been only about a year ago. And I clearly remember articles in the newspaper where he was supporting the concept that she shouldn't be mayor. And as a matter of fact, once again, it was only after massive public pressure that he did vote correctly. And, you know, I would challenge him to come up with any kind of documentation from minutes or the media to back up his statement, because I think it's clearly incorrect. A number of people I've talked to that were involved at the same time said, what do you mean? Is anybody really going to believe this or what?
Did you talk to Celia about it by any chance?
No, but I'm sure she would probably feel the same way. I know she was feeling pretty much beat up upon by the duo there.
Mm-hmm. I know that that's also the opinion of my producer, Becky Johnson, who recalled a specific article in the Sentinel which said even though that Rotkin was not in the end a proponent, he voted with the majority, seeing which way the wind was blowing.
Mm-hmm.
that he initially came up with a lot of criticisms of Celia Scott as a potential mayor, and then he left town during the period when the issue got hot. And when he got back, he saw that, you know, that the measure was not going to be popular among hardcore progressives, and apparently jumped on the other side. At least that was her analysis.
Well, yeah, like I said in my original letter on this matter, it seems that he's now trying to jump from the endorsement that he made of the business-backed candidates, including people like Quartararo, that had the backing of, you know, some very conservative former council members and actually ran against a progressive in his previous campaign. Suddenly, he no longer wants to associate himself with those people since they were repudiated overwhelmingly by the voters, and now he wants to jump back to the other side and say, oh yeah, well, I was with you all the time as a progressive here, folks. But, I mean, I've got the door hanger. I held it up in front of him at the council meeting, and I didn't hear any denials as far as his name being not authorized to be on it. He was rather public in his support for these non-progressive people.
So he supported the candidates Walton, Quartararo. Do you support Walton? I'm not sure.
I think he was involved with an ad that said vote diversity, and Walton was on that ad. That's one of the reasons I invited him to resign from the council, because he was saying there was too many pale males on the council.
Mm.
After having served 14 years and feeling strongly about the issue, that he would do the right thing and step down.
Well, maybe in 2 years he'll really come to a decision on that one.
Yeah, I think the realization will creep in more strongly when it doesn't affect him personally, perhaps.
The next item is, I voted with a unanimous council to approve a scaled-down beach area plan. The council spent 7 years working on that plan with all unanimous council votes, including the last one.
Yeah, well, to be very factual, first of all, there was a flyer sent around to virtually every house in the city of Santa Cruz strongly endorsing the original discredited beach plan. Mike Rodkin's name was on that as a person who did endorse that plan. So once again, you know, after... In this case, they realized that this was not going to be passed through a referendum, if necessary, through the public involvement. Then they retreated and said, okay, well, you know, maybe we'll have to listen to the public here, especially since they're probably going to put it on the ballot and we're going to lose. But, I think we look for our progressive leaders to lead, not have to be constantly pressured to do the right thing. And I think this is another example where it's clear that he was on the wrong side of the issue for some length of time, and they finally cut it back radically and made a compromise.
And I also think it's quite misleading to say he led unanimous council votes. I remember a series of 5-2 votes, which I repeatedly brought to the attention of city council in various speeches, where we could see that they voted down 5-2, 5-2, 5-2, any changes in the Canfield, as I called it, sellout plan, the Seaside Company sellout, until finally, you know, massive protest at Civic Auditorium forced them to stop shutting off debate and forced them to scale down their plan until after the election, which they hoped to get. All they needed was one person, but they didn't get their one person, and so now it's looks like it might be more propitious to jump on the other side.
Exactly, yeah, jump ship and claim, oh, I was with you all the time. You know, that seems to be the theme here, and it's quite cynical, because it's almost like the whole previous council majority, of which he was a prominent member's attitude, like, well, we're going to go right ahead and do what we want, and if you want to stop us, you'll have to sue, or you'll have to try to raise the money or the public support. In this letter here, he is saying things that people who were there don't remember the way that he's saying, but he's still saying them, and I think there's some even clearer examples of that in these next few points that we're going to cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one last thing about the beach plan. Let's see. But it slipped my mind, so let's move on.
All right, there's plenty more points here.
Indeed. I voted to sell Pelton property, a plan supported by Mayor Byers until the last vote, in order to raise money for the purchase of the Bombay property in a city park. The homeless garden now has space needed for expansion of the Poganip. The petition was short of the minimum number of registered voters, too late to stop the sale, and provided voters with no alternate funding source for the Greenbelt or south of Laurel Park.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a really good example of how he tries to rationalize his way out of something. So he has all these good reasons for what he did, and of course, you know, anyone who listened to Mike Rodkin knows that he likes to go on and you know, with these long rationalizations. But what he fails to mention in this particular point he's making is that he voted to stop the homeless garden before the signatures had been counted and it was apparent that there were not enough signatures. He did it intentionally, and it says here it was too late to stop the sale. The ref the initiative. Well, yes, it was too late to stop the sale because Mr. Rotkin and others purposely voted on it so that the initiative would not be able to stop the sale if it had qualified. And I see this as probably the most egregious thing in this entire list. This is a deliberate slap, along with the city charter violation, deliberate slap at the voters and at the democratic process, saying, well, I'm going to make this a done deal before it gets a chance to get on the ballot because I know best and here's all my terrific reasons. Well, you know, maybe this is an enlightened political being, but nevertheless, I don't think that we really want any dictators in our local government or otherwise. You know, if there's a procedure for the democratic process to handle this, we certainly don't need the council trying to thwart it, and that's exactly what was done in this case.
You know, it's also a slap at the truth, which to me is important, because if you're trying to educate yourself on the issue, and you're hoping, as Rotkin is a professor at the university, and as such, presumably when he's not engaging in his council activities, and also claims to be an activist on other issues, he has a certain amount of credibility and respect among the college community for, you know, his actions on campus, and his willingness, for example, to turn to... He lets people do community projects on the sleeping ban, even if they oppose his view and so forth, and gets credit as a sort of a liberal, broad-minded person for doing that. But I note that he doesn't... this is not just a slap at the democratic process, a slap at his progressive constituents, a slap at the city charter, but it's also a slap at the truth, in the sense that... like Linda Steinau, when she made her last debate, she was the conservative city council candidate, for you listeners who don't know, whom Rotkin, I believe, supported, as well as Kennedy and Hernandez and
I suppose Matthews.
Again, I'm not sure about those two, but certainly the one that would enter their camp and give them the 4-3 majority if she won, which she didn't. And she claimed at the last forum before the students that she was really pleased with the new beach plan, that she favored it. And Quartararo said, no, I've always opposed that, and I've always supported the expanded beach plan. I went up to Quartararo afterward, and I shook his hand.
Right,
I said,
he's an honest man. Huh?
You are an honest man. Yeah. You know, I disagree with you. You're wrong as far as I'm concerned. I called you Canfield's banker, but you are an honest man on this issue, and I commend you for it. He was pleased to hear that.
An honorable opponent is what we should be having in this city process.
It clarifies issues. You know, it makes it at least clear what's really going on.
Right.
With Rotkin, you know, I've debated him numerous times on the sleeping ban, which... I think is the next issue coming up.
Right.
But this is this paragraph is packed with stuff. Rotkin tends to throw out fabrications faster than you can, blink an eye. Anything more on this lengthy description that he gives?
Yeah, well, I just think it's totally egregious that, and I'm quoting his letter here, say, well, the petition was short of the number of registered voters and too late to stop the sale, because, as I said, he voted to pass this and to thwart this process before he knew that it had an insufficient number of voters, and he's claiming that, well, you know, it wouldn't have worked anyway, but he did not have this knowledge, and he deliberately thwarted the democratic process by trying to make sure that it didn't get to go to the voters, which is inexcusable. I can't see any way you can, you know, you could spew out volumes and you still can't, dance your way around that issue.
Well, I know a big thing around the Pelton Street property issue is also the kind of the closed process, which we saw, of course, repeated again in the Beach Flats boondoggle. But the closed process by which it was originally brought up, I heard it was brought up at a council meeting in 97 in a subcommittee, which nobody heard about. And then suddenly, wham, bam, there it was.
Funny thing.
Rolling forward on the agenda. And he also, I noticed a sort of a sleazy association of buyers with this process. What is your sense on that?
Catherine, well, I don't know. I mean, as far as I could see, she listened to her constituents and was willing to make a clear statement that she was opposed to some of the more negative aspects of this plan from a fairly early date. It may quite likely have been that up until some point, herself and Celia really didn't know the details of this plan. I know when I was meeting with Celia regularly as a support group member from the time she became mayor, well, nobody really understood the plan in the beginning. I think it was over 400 pages, and it was, as you said, a very top-down thing. And we were being sold like, oh, well, everybody wants to clean up the beach.
Talking about the Pelton property. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Robert. I thought you were back on the beach plan. You know, I don't have that information as far as Catherine's position on the Pelton property. I have to plead in position.
I know that there was a very serious dispute between Byers and Rotkin on that issue at City Council in one of the debates. Rotkin insisted that Byers had come along. Byers disputed it. So perhaps we'll be hearing from her if Good Times chooses to print her response.
Well, it says that he voted to sell. This is his quote, Rotkin. From his letter, if we can trust his words, which is up to the individual to determine, I guess, but he says, I voted to sell the Pelton property, a plan supported by Catherine Byers, until the last vote. Well, this is sort of cynical. Obviously, the last vote is the one that counts.
Mm-hmm.
So she apparently saw the light, you know, ultimately, and voted correctly.
And I frankly don't even think that's true. I was there for a lot of those Pelton property votes. More important, though, I didn't follow it in great detail. I remember a very strong disagreement between Rotkin and Byers mm-hmm. about what her position had been. So I think he has one understanding of it, she has another. I also noticed that he attacks the Pelton property homeless garden folks for saying that they provided no alternative funding source for the Greenbelt or south of Laurel Park. Any comment on that?
Oh, let's see, Robert. Well, you know, you can cast versions this way or that way on that. I don't know, you know, that's any kind. I mean, like I said, he's got a million reasons here that he did things, but violating the democratic process is never an excuse, even if you were right, which, you know, I don't believe that he was, but even if he was right, it's still not an excuse for...
Well, another thing is that a lot of the reasons that we've heard for these development projects, whether it's Costco's or Mission Street expansion or the Gargolic Gateway project, we need money. We need to find all the funding for all the wonderful things. That's why we have to do this. And this is, you know, sort of a pat answer that Rotkin perennially has for his development scam of the moment. And it's just sort of, I think people have to be very sensitive and careful to that he's very good about throwing this in there. Obviously, you could take funding from the police department and deal with it this way instead of building huge new police facilities, instead of another $100,000 for computers and another $100,000 for police furniture, which you're getting on the agenda on Tuesday night. You could throw that to a campground, and that would set up a campground for the winter. But, you know, we don't have that. Even with the new council, they're still using the Rotkin mentality, mm-hmm. I'm afraid. That's why I've written a flyer recently essentially called Kennedyism Without Kennedy, and that's what, you know, we continue to have because it's so entrenched in the city staff.
Yeah. Well, that's a definite issue that didn't get covered in either of our letters is, you know, the degree to which the staff controls things just by, you know, their slant that they put on things and their chokehold on the information. And I think that's something that the new council has been made very well aware of if they weren't originally, and that's something that I think, you know, progressive city obviously needs a progressive city staff, and if, you know, people don't want to cooperate in that direction, then hopefully we can find people who will.
Okay.
And it sounds like we're sort of moving into our next point, dealing with the sleeping ban.
Right.
You were a second ago.
He said he never voted for the sleeping ban or has been in place since the 1960s. I simply joined every member of the city council since 1970 and not putting its removal on the council agenda. Progressives should support, as I have said, expanded services for the homeless, not the right to sleep outside in bad weather. And I'm going to throw in something before I toss the ball to you.
Okay,
he has voted for the sleeping ban. He voted for it in 1979. It hasn't been on the books since the 1960s. It's been on the books since 1978.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a camping ban on the books since 1967, but it never specified sleeping. Sleeping only became a part of the code in terms of the broad way it is now enforced, where any sleeping outside after 11 in a vehicle or on any public property and on much private property is per se criminal offense. Do it twice, it's 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine and a misdemeanor offense. That provision was voted on by Rotkin in 1979 as a freshman council member. He voted in favor of that. But more important, one can make mistakes when one is a freshman, he reaffirmed his support for that in 1996 and in 1997 when I specifically asked him, you mean you want to keep it a misdemeanor so people do it twice, they get up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine for doing something they have to do twice within 48 hours, and you admit there's a shelter crisis where no one could go to sleep anyway, where there's no room for people, for 80% of homeless people, he says, yes, I support that.
Yeah, well, I think, Robert, that this is once again what we were saying earlier. It's unfortunate that we don't have a higher degree of candor in these responses. There's definitely an attempt to obfuscate the reality, and, you know, I think you probably have a pretty good memory. This is the issue that you're primarily interested in. And
certainly one
know,
of them.
As far as, you know, this seems to be a pattern through a lot of these replies. We've pointed out several inaccuracies. I think that, you know, like I said earlier, that if I had been wrong on this one because he contradicted me, and I apologize if I didn't have my facts right. And but, you know, to purposely do this kind of stuff as a matter of practice and consistently, I mean, you know, I think it's terrible that a public official or anyone involved in the public light, if they would be purposely, you know, trying to distort the record just to make an argument in their favor. I mean, I think that we need to be honest here. If we're going to have a give and take, and it's going to be productive, and it's going to be in the interest of the city, we have to, you know, at least keep the facts in the realm of reality. You can't just, you know, start distorting things just because you want to win the debate.
Exactly.
And as far as what I had to reply to that, since I wasn't sure on the facts, you know, giving him the benefit of the doubt, which I think, you know, given what you just said, that we can no longer do in this issue. But in his letter, I said he cites 3 decades of progressive activism, including 14 years on the council, but denies any responsibility for it being crime not to have a place to sleep in Santa Cruz, and the shelters aren't open most of the year. So how can you be taking credit for having 3 decades of progressive activism and 14 years on the council, but not be responsible for the laws that are on the books?
Right. In fact, he is a man who voted in favor of that law both in 1979 and again in 1989, when city council rushed to patch it up after a court decision threatened to tear it apart in an urgency session, I might add, in December, because they couldn't do anything. They passed an emergency law after the case of Linda Edwards hit the courts, because the attorney in that case, Ray Gruneich, showed that Linda, who was a homeless woman who slept outside in her van, could not apply for a permit, because for 11 years under Rotkin's fine sleeping ban law, there had been no adequate permit process. Not that they ever would give permits anyway, but there wasn't even a process.
Right.
Now they've had a process in place since 1989, but they've never granted a permit that I've heard of.
That's disturbing, isn't it? I mean, it's real double talk, you know, and it's not candid to come to the public and try to distort reality by a lot of words.
Right.
It's not something that I think is acceptable from a public official.
Definitely. And frankly, that's how I feel about the current council majority, which has the same opportunity in this December to hold an urgency vote on the issue of the sleeping ban, which they could do. They could do on this council session, but Byers has refused repeatedly to put it on the agenda. And the agenda item that we have in place, I don't know if you've heard about it. Have you heard about item 31?
I don't know exactly. I understand the staff wrote the agenda item, but the council's hope to...
Well, we're hoping we can get council to beef it up, you know. But the problem is, if you listen to Crone and the last statements from Crone and Byers were just pathetic, and they were complete, and to my mind, the word sellout comes to mind. Sleeping ban, the phrase sleeping ban completely disappears. Instead, we have Catherine talking about examining the camping ban sometime in February and lowering the fines, which has nothing to do with what people need. They don't need lowered fines. You just don't need to be fined for sleeping, period.
Well, I can talk with you more about this after Tuesday, Robert. I don't want to condemn anybody in advance.
I'm hoping you'll join us on Tuesday with a blanket over your shoulder there, Fred, in the hopes that the sight of their own supporters supporting this law, a change in this law, would actually have a real impact on them.
Well, I'll be down there, and whether I have a blanket or not...
Well, have your teddy bear, even if you don't have a blanket.
I think I'll, I'm trying to influence him on this issue, so I'll continue that.
All right. Well, look, Fred, I appreciate your running this by me. I know we have 2 more items we're skipping, unless you want to go into them.
Yeah, I want to do them real quick, Robert.
Go for it.
Okay,
well, he never voted to give away title to city lands, writes Mike Rotkin in the Good Times on December 3rd. We're talking to Fred Geiger, a community activist instrumental in the victorious campaigns of Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, the new 3 city council members on the majority. And Rotkin wrote this letter: "I never voted to give away title to city lands. I followed the advice of estate legal experts to accept a settlement giving the city 20% of a boardwalk parking lot. They advise that if we challenge the boardwalk's ownership of the property, the city will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, lose in court, get no public land, and set a bad precedent for public ownership or tidelands in California." Of course, my point is, if you believe their advice, of course,
Well, once again, Robert, just like in the Pelton issue here, he is denying the reality of what actually happened. He did, in fact, vote to not contest the city's interest in this, and he doesn't want to mention in this his response, of course, that the city charter specifically prohibits any public land title being given away or alienated, as it states in the charter, without a vote of the people. So this is, he just chooses to fluff over this one and say, well, we were just going by the advice of this guy. But what he also doesn't say is the same guy, Blake Stevenson, attorney for the State Lands Commission, said that if the city did choose to litigate it, that the Lands Commission would be doing that for us. And I don't think it would cost the city a lot of money. I think that it would be the state's burden. And regardless of whether it costs the city a lot of money or not, violating the city charter and then trying to rationalize it is once again really just an obfuscation. It certainly isn't an honest approach to this issue, because in fact, I mean, it's there for anybody who wants to see the vote. The vote was to give away our claim to the other 80%. For whatever reason, doesn't matter.
Well, at least he doesn't drag out the Army Corps of Engineers as his excuse, but perhaps that comes later, I don't know.
There was that sweetener, too, that we're going to get some landscaping out of the Corps of Engineers if we don't hesitate. But once again, it all comes back to the charter. I think it's a one-sentence or a two-sentence statement that no public land shall be alienated or, in other words, distributed or given away without a vote of the people. Well, you know, you can go on and on as long as you want why it was okay, but I think any rational person reading that one or two sentences in the city charter can realize that it was violated.
And even if you're not legalistic, you find yourself wondering why river property is being given away to a magnate like Charles Canfield at the boardwalk without any kind of a fight. And if the concern is money, then I'll jump back to one of Rotkin's previous votes on Pelton Street to make have the city, what is it, pay for the legal expenses of any challenges to the Pelton Street settlement?
Yeah, they were going to be 50% liable for any legal challenges, so they weren't too worried about the attorney bill in that case, and they didn't have the state of California's legal backup on that issue either.
Well, you know how it is, here and there. Finally, the final vote here, do you have more you wanted to say about that? Or?
No, let's go on.
His final response to you was, I have always supported the right of firefighters to binding arbitration over contract disputes, opposed the right of arbitrators rather than elected officials to set salaries.
So, I mean, let's get serious here. I mean, did he or didn't he oppose the arbitration? I remember in the very beginning picketing Scott Kennedy's house with a bunch of other labor people, and Scott Kennedy and Michael Rotkin were in fact opposed to having arbitration for the contract disputes for the firefighters. And the fact that he's saying, well, I only opposed it for salary issues. Well, I mean, let's think about reality a minute here. What is usually the major issue in any kind of a contract dispute? It's money. So he's saying, well, I didn't oppose it, but in fact, well, given this little qualifier, which is most cases, or at least the most important cases, he did in fact oppose it.
Huh?
Doublespeak once again. And I think, like I said, very disappointing lack of candor. And, you know, I just wanted to add that, you know, people have kiddingly accused him of pontification before, but I wonder if he really thinks he's infallible. Has he ever voted wrong on anything in 14 years? I mean, it's okay. You know, I don't think people expect him to be perfect, but we do expect him to have a sense of candor and to have a debate based on facts rather than trying to obfuscate facts. And that's all I'm asking here, not for perfection from himself.
And hopefully the Good Times will print your letter, though they've never printed one of mine in the history of their publication. Who knows? It could be a first time for everything.
A person that works at the Good Times told me that letter was going to be published, and he was very surprised that it was going to be published. I think that perhaps there might be several letters. I've been told by some of my associates in the political scene that they're going to write letters because they're very upset at this, you know, sort of a cover-up attempt.
It's just a rewriting of history.
Yeah, it is.
It's really
disturbing. So whether they print a letter from me or someone else, that's fine. I don't care. I think basically anybody who really studied the issue has pretty much the same conclusions, and I hope that it will be printed so that the public will have a chance to really see what the facts are rather than sort of a rewritten version of the facts.
We're on the line with Fred Geiger, community activist, whose exchange of letters with Mike Rotkin has been publicly a matter of interesting discourse in the Good Times, and I guess there'll be another Good Times coming out next week. Michael Rotkin, if you happen to be listening, you're invited to call in at 427-3772. In fact, we may ask our producer to give you a call at home in case you want to respond. Probably should have done this earlier. I'm afraid I get a little behind in these things. We'll give Mike an opportunity to respond on air if he'd like to do that. And we want to thank you, Fred, and I do hope you bring that teddy bear and blanket with you, even if you're bringing it in a suitcase, only to bring it out at the end of the council meeting when the council fails to proceed in the way that it should.
Be positive, Robert. Be positive.
Always be positive unless you see and see some negative stuff you have to deal with.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
So, you're still with us, we hope, at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and we are still at 427-3772. I am still Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norse, actually sitting, can you believe it, in my bathrobe in front of the mic, waiting for the phone lines to light up, and are they lighting up? Here we go.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good morning, Robert. This is Roxanne.
Hi, Roxanne.
I have a really bad cold, so I hope you can...
Oh, no, you're quite audible.
Hey, Robert, you and Fred really upset me.
Okay.
You know, you guys keep trying to talk about... I'm getting away from my radio.
Turn down your radio, yes.
You guys keep trying to handle everything with logic. Don't you know that just never works?
Tell us what to do.
I'm just kidding, because everything Fred said is just so true. But on the homeless issue, the sleeping ban, I just think that we can't... I'm not as tolerant as Fred.
Good.
And I'm not as tolerant as Fred because I don't want to hear that the people that I worked really hard for start getting up and sounding like politicians. And they're smart enough to know that by the time February rolls around, it's spring. And people have been suffering all winter. They've let people suffer. And I know that one of the agenda items is to make the churches responsible for maybe allowing more cars in their parking lot instead of the 3-car limit.
They can't do that legally.
Well, why should they?
Right.
We have city lots all over this town.
Right.
All they have to do is put a couple chemical toilets in. I'm thinking of the one over by Lincoln Street, by the Red Church, that is empty all night, every night. It's not a place where people park to walk to town, unless it's on first night or something, a very crowded night. And there is no reason for the city to palm this off on the churches as someone else's responsibility.
Definitely.
And I think that this is... I think that when the new city council talks about having to get the statistics and talk with agencies, they're forgetting something very important. The very things that they were against and the reason that they ran for city council was because agencies were giving statistics to our city council that was then in office that were incorrect, that made the agencies look real good. And they were not correct and true statistics. We even got bad advice from supposedly someone who was a CEQA lawyer who was sitting on the city side giving them advice. Things that we really believed were totally against CEQA and not in the spirit of the CEQA law.
Now, CEQA is?
That's, you know, the... California, the regulations that had to do with housing people, when we were looking at people's housing being taken away, and the environmental impact report was what we dealt with CEQA, actually, not relocation.
So,
but I mean, I'm just saying, you can get all kinds of experts to give you, and if you are so stupid that you cannot believe your eyes, if you can't look around you and see people who have nowhere to go in this town, who are cold, who are miserable, who are hungry, I mean, there's tickets given to them every night, then you're really not capable of doing a good job. You don't have to go to the shelters and say, well, do you need more beds? Is that the problem? You don't need to go to CAB and go, do you need more money? Is that the problem? There's a huge problem. February is way too late, I think.
Well, now, aren't you being a little too harsh on our good new city council members? After all, they, quote, haven't got their feet wet yet.
I don't think I'm being harsh on them. I'm telling them what I expect. And unlike Fred, because the items, the way they are written, are unacceptable, because I saw the Voices from the Village program the other night, and unlike Fred, I'm not going to wait for a bad decision to be made. And I'm not going to wait for people to say, well, we're going to see about this in the spring, in February. Because I don't think it's fair to our fellow human beings who are just, you know, the Sentinel never prints the unfavorable statistics in their paper that they don't want the tourists to read or whatever. So we always have a skewed... sort of tally system, but I know that 100 people in San Francisco died last winter from overexposure, from you know, getting pneumonia out in the rain. We'll never know what that is here because it's always covered up. The Sentinel, you know, if they want our land down here in the beach flats, they're going to inflate crime statistics. If they don't want tourists to know there's lots of homeless, they're going to minimize it. So they don't deal with any kind of, I don't think, honor in the way that they do their journalism. So we don't, I don't really know here in Santa Cruz, but I know I see it. I know it's everywhere I go.
Well, you yourself have been in homeless circumstances in the past.
I have, and I was homeless through no fault of my own. I was leaving a very dangerous situation, and I had my child. And I was a lucky homeless. I mean, first, I was a homeless person during the time, it was in the 70s, when there weren't the horrendous kinds of crimes there are now against people who are just out there. You know, no one was slitting the homeless's throats. So I had a car, I had $800. So right there, that puts me in a whole different category, you would think. But what really happens is, I was homeless during the hottest time of the year, when Indian summer, and I was afraid all the time. I was afraid someone would take my child away, because being homeless was a crime then, a little bit more than it is now. And I was terrified of that. I also was afraid. Like, I slept sitting up in a bucket seat in my car all night, every night. And I would duck my head when I would see lights. I would stay awake so no one would break into our car. To me, homelessness is synonymous with fear. I didn't expect my homelessness to go on so long because I had rent money. But there was a less than 1/10% of a vacancy rate when I got here. And so I was actually homeless for almost 5 months total. And I was afraid to go into my money at all, because that wasn't even enough for really first and last. You know, it was still a marginal amount of money. And you're prey to every wacko that thinks they're a good person, you know. I had a church take me shopping for groceries. They gave me $80 to shop. Now, that was a great amount of money, but they wouldn't give me the money to shop because, well, what if I was an alcoholic, or what if I was a dope addict? So they took me to Grady's Market.
And they held your hand.
They walked me around. But I had no refrigeration, being homeless. I had to buy $80 worth of groceries at one whack. I mean, it was ridiculous. We stayed with some people who offered us a bed in a spare room from another church.
This is you and your daughter?
And this was my son, who's now 30 years old. So that'll give you an idea. He was 6, how long ago this was.
Wow.
But he put on the TV, and he and the little boy in the house were watching Bewitched, you know, just the sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother came in, told me to get my stuff and get out. My son was putting satanic programming on the TV. I mean, my experiences, I could tell you for an hour what they were. People, I got scared of people, you know, do-gooders. Scared to death of them.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it was I know that how much people suffer. I can tell you that because we held on to this kernel of money so that we could get a house, just held on to it till something became available. You know, we didn't buy any treats. We didn't, you know, we lived on peanut butter, that kind of thing. And I just remember this one incident where a child and his parents came out of a store where they were selling snow cones. And our tongues were dragging on the ground, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this little boy is just screaming and having a fit. I said I wanted strawberry. I told you. And he has a fit, and he smashes this huge, beautiful snow cone on the ground. Hey, I could have taken that kid. It was just like, you know, you are so spoiled. I mean, things like that make an impact on you when you have nothing.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing that I'm telling you is it wasn't that I had nothing. I mean, when I tell my story, I feel somewhat guilty because I had $800. Do you know what I'm saying? I had a vehicle. And, I mean, I didn't have anything else, but I still see my resources were much, much better than so many of the people that I see. And I was still terrified. And I still didn't know where to sleep. I didn't know where, you know.
Well, that's because there was nowhere to sleep. Even in those days, actually, the sleeping ban actually in vehicles, they were harassing people in their vehicles even in the early 70s.
Yes, they were. I mean, that's why I didn't know where to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid that they'd see that there was a child in my vehicle.
You know, one of the most sort of despicable things about all this is that it really gives a tool to bad cops to harass people they don't like. And that's one of the reasons that David Silva is really kind of concerned about. Well, I mean, we're all aghast at this series of items that the city staff has drawn up for item 31 coming on the city council Tuesday night at 7. That's why I turned out a flyer yesterday called "A Council That Promises Compassion Serves as a Sham That Shames the City." And then the other side says, "This is it." And I'm encouraging everyone to come to city council with blankets and bathrobes and teddy bears and all the implements of nightwear, with the hope of also drawing some media attention to get, you know, some real stuff done on this agenda. I mean, these series of items can be changed by that city council if they have the will to do it. And I'm hoping to meet tonight with Chris Krohn to get him to realize, and I've tried this before, apparently without success, but maybe now I can get somewhere, who knows. Maybe not. Maybe now I know I'm not going to get anywhere. But, I mean, what's clearly missing from here is things like, as you said, an open parking lot or parking structure with a bathroom that's open 24 hours a day. The blanket ban has to be removed for the winter, period. The prosecutions have to be frozen. There has to be direction to the police that they're only going to go after health and safety violations and only after bona fide complaints that are really based on people who have a real interest, like if someone's causing a lot of noise. But even then, you know, I mean, you have other laws to use. You don't even need to use 6.36. They said a key point of this should be, don't use this law. Use other laws if there are real public health and safety concerns.
Right. If they're breaking the law, it will fit into...
Yeah, it'll fit into
some other parameter.
Sure, if it's disturbing the peace, if it's pissing on the street, if it's littering, if it's, you know, a noise after a certain hour. All those codes are already in existence. This is simply the pet code of the police department for going after people they don't like. And I've seen this actually, I mean, ironically, in two very egregious cases that just happened to come up in the autumn. One of an elderly man who lives in his van called Lloyd Lawrence, who catheters himself because he's had cancer and he has a condition that he really has to constantly do this. And he apparently was with someone who made a disparaging comment to an officer on the mall. And later that night, the officer saw...